Hey, everybody, I want to introduce a new sponsor to the podcast. It's the Hell's Half Mile Film and Music Festival. It's celebrating its 10th year this September, the 24th through the 27th in Bay City, Michigan. Hell's Half Mile is the perfect mix of independent film and live indie music, celebrating creativity and the independent spirit, both on screen and in song. Visit hellshalfmile.com for more information. I was a juror a couple years ago. It was one of the best experiences I've ever had. I love Bay City. I thought it was a spectacular spot. It was beautiful. Every moment I was there was actually wonderful. And it falls right on my birthday. They took care of me. They gave me a nice cake and everything. So I can't say enough about it. Visit hellshalfmile.com again to get all of your Hell's Half Mile needs taken care of. But remember, their 10th year anniversary. If you're anywhere in the Midwest or traveling through, make your arrangements to stop by and visit this exceptional festival. I welcome the Hell's Half Mile Film and Music Festival, my newest sponsor. And now let's get on with the show. Hey everybody, this is Adam Chartoff, your host of FilmWax Radio. This is episode number 298 of the podcast. I'm thrilled to have your attention. This is, of course, a very big, big episode. This is the episode that Jason Schwartzman came on to. So what happened was he's currently promoting two films that he's coming out in. One was the Sundance hit, The Overnight. And this was a great film, I have to tell you. I don't know. I loved it. I thought this was tackling taboos, sexual taboos specifically, that very few films, I mean, I've seen have tackled. Men have a lot of, they won't talk about it publicly, but I don't know if they do because I'm not usually overhearing this, but they don't talk about their penis size or their, you know, anxiety around that, you know? I mean, the best thing you can do is just to marry one woman and stick with her, because if she's okay with your penis, then you should just stick with her, you know? That's kind of the smart way to go. But for a lot of us out there, I'm now 50 years old. I'm an old guy, and I'm single, and I still show different women when they wish to see it. You know what I'm saying? It's like, oh, yay, every single freak. I got to show that again to somebody new. So that's more information than I necessarily wanted to share with you, but it pertains to the film and to the conversation with Jason Schwartzman, so I want you to hear it. So I basically had that. Then he has another film. Okay, that's The Overnight. So if it deals with male's vulnerability and anxiety around that. It's one of the themes, if you will. But essentially, it's about Adam Scott and Taylor Schilling from Orange is the New Black. They are new in town in L.A., and they have a little kid, and they haven't made any friends, and they're at the playground, and Jason Schwartzman's character walks up to them and introduces them. He befriends them, and he invites them to come over to his and his wife's house and to hang out. And it becomes this incredible evening. You know, they have a kid too, and so the little boys hit it off and they go to bed, and then the adults had this incredible series of experiences. All I can tell you is see The Overnight. It's being distributed by The Orchard. It's a lot of fun, a lot of laughs, but it also goes to places. I described one, and you know, marriage, boredom in marriage, sexuality within the marriage, how to keep things, you know, it always comes up. How to keep things exciting. You don't have to be married for that. If you're in a long-term relationship, you know the sex, keeping it exciting is hard. And when you hear about people who are in relationships for years that they still have a great sex life, I always get pissed off at them, you know, because let's face it, the most of us that are in long-term relationships, it's not easy. It's not easy to keep things different, exciting, because really, if you can do that, you'll have sex every night. I mean, you know, the idea that we, most of us, when we're in long-term relationships, end up having sex once a week, once or twice a month sometimes, maybe even less frequently once they're kids. It's just natural. It happens. We all have a lot of shame around it. God bless The Overnight. That's all I'm going to say. It's directed by this new up-and-comer named Patrick Bryce. He has that film coming out, and he has another one called Creep coming up soon. And so, and I have not seen that. And it stars Mark Duplass, but I'm going to go, I want to see that one as well. And I'm sure that will happen in the next days or weeks. And I'm sure we'll get Patrick on the show. I really want to. But how great to get Jason Schwartzman on. So I was pursuing. The publicists were like, yes, it's happening. But, you know, I get very uptight about it because here's a big opportunity to get somebody kind of big, you know, on the show. And if Jason comes on and he listens and he likes it, then maybe, you know, we'll get, I don't know, somebody, you know, so another guy like that or another chick like that. So I met Jason at, for those who listen to the show, they may have heard this anecdote, but I met him at South by Southwest where Seven Chinese Brothers premiered. Now, Seven Chinese Brothers is the second film that Jason is starring in. And the director of that film is Bob Byington. And Bob has been on the show. And you're going to get to meet Bob again. For better or for worse, in a couple of minutes when we play the Jason Schwartzman segment in a minute. But Bob, I interviewed Bob, and when I was waiting for Bob in Austin, I'm looking down on the table, and there's Jason Schwartzman's South by Southwest badge. Like, he has an industry badge that gets him in and out of events and screenings and parties. It's laying there on the table. And I'm thinking to myself, I could take this thing and just put it in my pocket. And, you know, but then what kind of instinct is that? So anyway, he came in the room and I made sure he got the badge and everything was, but it was good because it was a way for him to remember who I was. And then they had the party, which they do after premieres. They always have a party for the film at the festival. So I go to that and I'm coming up and it's late into the party. And as I'm going upstairs, there comes Jason Schwartzman walking down the steps to leave. And I'm like, hey, it's me again. And I had given my card and he said he promised to listen to the podcast. I don't think he ever listened to it. He's a busy guy. But thanks to my friends at Brigade Marketing who hooked me up with him, we sat down before the rooftop film screening of Seven Chinese Brothers. And only a couple of weeks before the theatrical premiere and probably VOD premiere of The Overnight, I got to sit with Jason Schwartzman. So the film, The Overnight, which is a comedy with lots of, you know, very, very intense film, but it's basically a comedy. Premieres on the Friday, June the 19th, in theaters near you. And Seven Chinese Brothers will premiere later in the summer. In the meantime, though, here's I'm gonna say this before I do my big here's Jason. Stick around though afterwards for another great conversation with my friend, third time now appearance on the show, Nathan Silver, great filmmaker. He's got a new movie going to premiere at BAM Cinema Fest. Nathan and I always have the greatest conversations. I know he's coming back again in a few, maybe even a few weeks. But in the meantime, this is my conversation with Jason Schwartzman regarding The Overnight and Seven Chinese Brothers. And there's a couple of guest appearances on that as well. A little few kind of people stop in and say hello. So listen to it right now. Thank you for listening to me. And we'll be back after this segment.
If you're uncomfortable, you don't have to do anything you don't want to.
Okay.
Hello. You new around here?
We just moved here from Seattle.
Well, welcome.
Thank you.
Wow. Max is really taking a shine to your boy. Tonight is our regular pizza night. We could turn it into a welcome the neighborhood get-together. Huh. It could be fun. Want a Whole Foods now? Any dietary restrictions?
I don't think so.
Screw it. You guys, I'm so excited. Yay!
All right.
Whoa.
Oh, wow.
Hello. Hello.
Thank you for having us
Thank
in your
you.
Beautiful home.
Glad you could be a service.
Why don't we put the kids to bed upstairs and continue down here?
Oh.
Give me 20 minutes and I will give you parental bliss.
What's this?
It's a photography zone.
You know you've got a really great look.
Anybody ever tell you that?
No.
Fabulous actress.
Now
really?
That is
yes.
Cool.
Oh,
yeah. I mean, I hope you're not going to be disappointed.
Fasten your seatbelts.
No, don't worry about it. Just no munching into the... No, I'm kidding. People want to hear Jason Schwartzman. I actually think munching on vegetables.
You ever heard... Do you ever listen to Howard Stern?
Yeah, probably.
You know, Paul McCartney ate vegetables on the Smile album.
He did?
What do they say?
Is that Smile album? Is that the Brian Wilson
yeah,
album?
Yeah, the Beach Boys that he...
How was that?
They say that was amazing.
I'm glad I knew that reference.
They say that he
There's a song called Vegetables, and they say that he chewed a piece of celery.
Okay.
Anyway.
This is my smile album, clearly.
Yeah.
Do you remember that we met very, very, very briefly? You had your badge was laying around in this lounge at South by Southwest in Austin, Texas.
Yep.
And then I saw it in front of me.
Yeah.
And there was a momentary urge of theft, which passed quickly. And then you walked in, and I gave it
you
to you.
You wanted to take it?
And I gave you my card. I said, I do this podcast. This is like 2 months ago.
I know, we're doing it.
How's that?
I know, it makes me happy. It
makes me happy.
But you're saying...
Officially.
You have an urge to steal.
It was just a temporary thing. I think there's an impulse to, like, oh, this is Jason Schwartzman's South by badge. I think I'll take it. Because that would be an interesting topic. Then I'd have to explain why I have it. Mm. And people would know instantly that I stole it. So that part of your... That's not even conscientiousness. It's just... fear of getting caught.
Right, right.
It's not even a good impulse. No, I wouldn't have taken it, of course. Anyway, and then on the steps again, and then I said, let me...
Yeah.
All right.
No.
So...
I know. I'm very happy to be here.
I'm glad.
I'm excited.
It's a podcast that talks about independent films, and now you're really doing a bunch of them, right? You've got The Overnight and Seven Chinese Brothers.
Yep.
What's the name of the character from Seven Chinese Brothers? Remind me. But what would Kurt?
Yep.
The character from
The Overnight.
The Overnight.
Yep.
If he met your character from Seven Chinese Brothers, Larry?
Yep, Larry.
How would Larry and Kurt get along?
It's a good question. maybe they'd get along pretty well. The character. Well, Larry is a friendly guy, but at the end of the day, he ends up alone most of the time. He's a lonely guy, and he's a guy who, he's a kind of a slow burning alcoholic. So he's not like a binge drinker, but he's drinking a lot slowly.
Right.
But he does end up alone, and I don't know if it's just because the people he's around at a certain point go home and call it a night and he's by himself. And the only reason I'm saying that is because the character of Kurt is a real gregarious person. And so maybe they would get along because, like, Kurt would do a lot of the work for him. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, a lot of he would make the plans. He's the kind of guy that would say, I'll come pick you up. You wait right there. I'll come get you. But I feel like Larry's a little less motivated.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe it'd be a good relationship.
Yeah.
But you know, they live in two different kind of worlds where Kurt's a L.A. entrepreneurial type of guy, and Larry, you know, he's a really just kind of like lonely dude.
Right.
He doesn't have a family or really anything, you know. So
one's much more engaged in the world,
yeah.
And one's much less. And but that's the then that's the thing. Where do you fall
in real life?
Like, which do you kind of associate more with?
Probably in the middle. I like to be alone or with my family, but alone with my family, hang out with my family. Mm-hmm. And, Kurt seems like a real host, dinner party type of host guy. And I don't, have people come over. And, Kurt wants to have people stay at his house for a long time. He's like, you know, his whole thing is like, don't leave my house.
Mm-hmm.
I would be a little bit different than that. So I think that I would be like Larry in terms of wanting to just hang out with my dog, but minus the, he's a very unmotivated person, and I'm lazy, but I'm motivated. I mean, I am a lazy, naturally a lazy person. Mm-hmm. But I'm motivated to do, you know what I mean?
You're weighing over your head is what you're saying. And
I'm
so you have to
head.
Deliver a lot.
Yeah.
I understand.
But, I think that, I'm in the middle. But I understand, you know, the character in Seven Chinese Brothers is, he's gregarious because he's nervous. And I can get with that too.
Sure, sure. That was sort of my way of kind of bridging these two things, which I feel compelled to kind of talk about, which is Seven Chinese Brothers and The Overnight, which are very different films. But both entirely entertaining. And I saw The Overnight. I had heard good things about it. And then I saw it. I did not see it at Sundance. I saw it at Tribeca at a press screen. And I loved it so much because I was thinking to myself, I think it just took on these taboos so I don't know what I'm trying to say. Like, really just took on those taboos without any, I don't know, any hesitation. Yeah. And the movie that came into my mind, the only other movie I remember in that, it was Bob and Carol and Ted and Alice.
Yeah, yeah.
Kind of did that too.
Yep.
And here was a movie that really took on things about homosexuality, bisexuality, whatever. Am I giving away spoilers?
Marriage.
But, and penis size is really big. Guys don't talk about it.
I know.
And it's, you did it in a really beautiful way, but wow. I was like so blown away that how honest it was.
Yeah. Well,
it really was.
I think I always like that the movie has the male nudity and a kind of that has all that stuff, but it's really, you know, the character like that Adam Scott plays, that's a big part of like his personality. And so it's like trying to help him through, you know, like through the night become a bit happier person, I guess, in some way.
Yeah.
But I agree with what you're saying about attacking taboos at times, and I always think the best like approach to anything like that is to kind of go directly at it.
Who's this Patrick Bryce guy though? I don't know
him. He's a great guy. He made a movie called Creep.
Okay,
he's the director of The Overnight. Yep.
Okay.
And I still haven't even seen Creep.
I haven't either.
Yeah, he won't. It comes out June 23rd. He let me know that today, so we can plug it.
Is he here?
He's not here tonight, but he was. But he's here in New York. I just saw him recently. He's a great guy because he's extremely smart, very funny. He has an incredible laugh, like a false set, like
yeah.
And it's nice when someone's a laugher. Because it's encouraging, especially if it's a director, like, it's encouraging. I don't know, he's an encouraging person. And he, like, makes it a fun place to be around him. He makes being around him a fun place to be. And, he allowed us, like, you know, that, The Overnight, for instance, was a very short, shoot. It was about 10 nights. And 2 days. So
the whole thing, by the way, does take place in one house. I mean, well, no, let me back up. There's a
couple locations, but
there's
for the most part.
Second house in a park, but basically, essentially speaking, go ahead.
Yeah. So, essentially speaking, I think obviously the movie has a mixture of kind of, hopefully more funny things with these kind of quieter moments between the characters and, some of it's, you know, sensitive topic and subject matter, but he just made it feel like try anything you want. Mm-hmm. And if they fail, we're all here. So we can just, you know, there wasn't, he makes it, and he has an ease about him.
Interesting.
He's 6'4".
Oh.
That's just a
bonus.
And he has
like a very shrill laughter.
Yeah.
It sounds like.
I know, it makes
him. That's nice.
Yeah. I know, it's kind of like Vince Vaughn. You know, Vince Vaughn's big, tall man, but has that great laugh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, right. It doesn't quite fit, but it's it means that it humanizes him, and it makes him identifiable. Yeah.
Did you love the movie Swingers?
That was a life changer. Sure.
Yeah, it was a great one.
It was incredible.
I loved it
because we can all, like most guys, could relate to it.
I know.
Like that, and then seeing Heather Graham.
I know.
Thinking, God. Look at those eyes.
I know.
We all fell in love with her there, right?
I know. I did. And I fell in love with Vince Vaughn.
Yeah, and Vince Vaughn, too.
He was amazing.
Yeah, it was.
That movie was, that performance is truly a great one, I think.
Does that kind of, like, those kind of moments where you still, obviously, it still resonates, rather, is that why you kind of keep returning to films like Seven Chinese Brothers, by the way, which is, you know, a pretty small film. I mean, considering movies that you've been making or could be making, Bob Byington's film is relatively small. I mean,
but
then you get those moments in those films.
Yeah, that's a good, I don't actually like,
you don't think about it in those terms.
Compared to Bob's movie, I've worked on bigger movies, but I've never been on, you know, like a movie that's like one of these like huge types of action type things that you hear about. You hear stories or you see the making of things, and it's just like
the making of is the budget of the making of
exactly
is bigger than the film. Yeah.
But
We're talking about Bob right now.
Yeah.
There's Bob.
Yeah, I'm going to be here for a few minutes.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah.
Bob Byington. Awesome.
Yeah. Well.
But talking to the mic, either when you're talking.
Yeah, but okay. No, I think that, yeah, I didn't, I don't, well, it's not like a movie, you know, like Swingers or something, you go, great. That's a great movie, and I want to be in movies like that, or I want to work in independent film because of that. But I think more than anything, I just like I love movies and I love music, and I love anything where I feel like there's a story or someone's making something that that they believe in. And Bob just left already. He didn't even answer a goddamn question. But you know, obviously not. Everyone makes these types of things, directors or movies, and it's very hard for an actor to get in. Like some movies, you know, you love the script, and then you can't make the movie. There's no funding. There's, you know, so it's it's very hard how these movies come to get a movie comes together, and so I just feel I can't try to figure it out too much. He's leaving again.
No, he's coming back.
What happened?
He's, you know, it's a big evening, and I don't blame you for being real. Are you excited for tonight's screening here at Rooftop Films?
I see all the people outside, and
there's a lot of people out there.
Yeah, I've heard good things about the series, and yeah, of course.
Have you been to Rooftop Films before?
No.
Really? Oh, I'm sorry. This is great. I love this venue, even though they've moved on to other venues, but this is their flagship kind
this
of.
This is the headquarters?
Well, it's where their Rooftop Films is just down the hallway, their offices, and then this is like the place where they've done most of their screenings over the years, but they've moved since to like down the street and everything. Bob, so.
So we're eligible for grants now that we.
Yeah, basically.
Grants. Yeah. Grants are great.
But Olympia gets to decide who gets what.
Olympia is eligible now for a grant.
Yeah. Bob's been on the show. He's been on.
Yep.
Yeah. You know, I was just saying that we were talking about like the fact that Jason's still like we were talking about Swingers, by the way, as like one example of a movie where
isn't that a great
it's
one?
An incredible film.
Do you like that movie? Of course. Everyone liked it.
Yeah.
I saw it in Telluride.
Mm-hmm. But then
it had a huge impact on the audience at the North American premiere.
It did?
A huge impact.
I'm talking to them.
800 people. It just played through the roof.
Yeah.
So entertaining and funny. Vince Vaughn, can you imagine like Vaughn seeing Vince Vaughn the first time with 800 people in the dark? You know, just like it was nuts.
That's what we were talking about.
It was nuts. Like I remember seeing that movie and it.
Where'd you see it first? Do you remember?
In Westwood,
Theater
in Westwood,
mm-hmm.
And but I remember seeing it, and the Jon Favreau character, I could really relate to that thing, right? What he's going through, and he was an example of this is a good guy, and he's trying to do the best he can, and. At the time, I was struggling romantically with this girl that she didn't see me as a threat. And by threat, I mean a possible boyfriend. And so I took her to see Swingers with me as a kind of way to say, like, see?
This is shorthand.
Yeah, like it was kind of like it was an example of how I was feeling in some way. And I like when a movie can do – I like when anything can do that for you.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Had you started making films then, Bob, when you saw at Telluride?
Not really, no.
No?
No.
But what were you doing there?
I worked at the festival.
Oh, I see. Okay. Well, you've since made like at least 20 or 30 amazing feature films. So.
I don't want to interrupt. I want to say
you're not interrupting. But Bob is like a brilliant filmmaker. And,
how much time you got?
Excuse me?
I said, what's wrong? He said, how much time do you have?
Oh, I see. the key thing is, like, what have you got, right? Isn't that the good line? Well,
that's Owner Trickell over there.
That's right. We're in the room, let's see, with Owner, and we just hi, Owner. Come on over and say hi, too. Hi, Jason Schwartzman, Bob Byington. This is, like, my dream.
So his book, he wrote a book called Rainstack.
Who?
Owner.
Children's book.
Oh, yeah, I read it to my kid, of course. Jacob has that. He loved it.
Jason, will you plug it in?
My daughter loves it.
Yeah, Jake, how old's your daughter?
4.5.
Okay. Well, my kid was probably a little older than when he got it. But, yeah, I love
it. It's a heavy one. It's a heavy one.
Rains.
It's a long one. Can she get
is that long?
No, not about the lumage. It's a heavy. It's
it's, a, it's, a, it's, a,
No, yeah. But the story is heavy.
But all those really great.
About, yeah, I know. No, it's that's the beauty of a book like that is that I can
sit in.
Get in.
Sure, please do. That's it's a dream to Orner, who's on every episode of my podcast.
But. That's the beauty of the son of a bitch is that
yeah.
you can smuggle in some effect.
I've also got a 9/11 reference in that book when the towers collapse. Is that in the book too? You actually see a trail of the towers after they fall. But that's a little, you know, the kid. You don't want to talk about with that with the kids or whatnot. But anyway, sorry.
Well, you should.
At
some
point. I'm a big
fan
of Jason and your mother, especially. I was telling you that earlier.
You have a mother that's in the business?
No,
I never heard of her.
Shire, and they're from the Rocky movie. You know,
of course.
Ever watched the Rocky movies growing up? I mean,
not. No, I didn't. Well, no, not. Until I was a little bit older, and we were taking a picture.
Well, I know he's going to want this, too.
Rocky movies are brilliant, actually.
I know. The first one is incredible, I think.
It's incredible in terms of pure drama, but like the kinetic energy of the fight scenes later,
which
are ridiculous and over the top, they're still choreographed so masterfully.
I know.
There's just, it's the ideal fight you'd want to see if you watched a boxing
match. I know. I put all fights up against those fights. But I'll tell you that the – no, I didn't watch those movies growing up until I was maybe a little bit older, like – well, I was still young, but like 8 or something. Yeah. I mean, but I would walk around my mom and in the 80s, those, you know, people would say, "Yo, Adrian," and I was always, as a little kid, I was always like thinking, who do they keep thinking she is?
Yeah.
They keep calling her this other name.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Because she was really associated with that role, so
of course.
I never knew what they were talking about. I was like, why do they keep calling you that? And then she kind of explained, but she's like a real shy person, and she loved movies and drama, but she's not really into Hollywood. So I think she hates, but she's shy.
Yeah.
I can see that.
But she turned you on. She I remember listening to a Terry Gross interview with you, and you were saying in her house, like, it was taking art and music very seriously was a big thing for her, right?
Yeah.
So you had an appreciation for art very early on.
Well, she's like, but not in like a sit down and watch this movie and let me tell you. It was just more that I was, as a kid, like, observed, like, when I would go to other kids' houses, the parents weren't, like, watching movies. It was just, like, more, like, just kind of fun and jump off the diving board. But with my mom, like, you'd go home and, like, she'd be, like, watching, like, a movie and up close to the TV, you know, rewinding it. And I just saw, I was like, wow, she really, like, these things are different for her than they are for other parents.
Can I ask a fan question?
Yeah. Please, yes, okay. Absolutely.
Darjeeling Limited, right? How long were you in India when you guys made that? And how did you like being in India?
I love being in India. I love
that movie, too.
We were there for 2.5 months, 3 months. It was great. I loved it.
Did you help write the story, too?
I did, yeah.
How did that come about? Like, would you trade emails to each other over a course of 6 months? Or?
Well, what happened was that Wes had this opening scene for it, and he read it to me. But at that, when he read it, he was just sharing it with me as a thing that he had written. And I love it. And then he said, how about you and I and Roman, like, we could work on this idea. And that's sort of like how it came about, was Wes inviting us to be a part of it. And then we were just, at the time, there was only this, basically, there was a nutshell of an idea, which was these three brothers are going to be on this train in India. And what's going to happen to them? He had like a feeling about it, and we just sort of. But what happened was he was living in Europe, and we were in America, so we'd fly to Europe and stay with him and work on it. And we did over the course of like a year and a half writing it. But really cool, because just sharing, like, Wes would sit down and put the pen to the paper at the end of the thing to construct it all. And but we would be writing these sentences kind of out loud. You'd kind of talk them out loud. But the thing that I loved about it was just share your story and just be really personal about things and just also be up for following any, like, possible thing.
For example, the prologue, you probably had that experience of having the 10-minute beginning of the scene with Natalie Portman when you
had an experience like that.
We've all had those experiences. Was that ever in the final film for one part?
No. What happened was that came about, like, Wes was going to make this short separate from the movie, and we were going to do it, and then he read it to me on the phone and was telling me that he was trying to get Natalie Portman to be in it, and we were always going to shoot it in this hotel room in France. And then but at the same time we were writing or doing Limited, and then he said one day, he called me and he said, I have an idea. What if we make the character in the short the same character in the movie?
Oh, right on, yeah.
And then it just kind of, so that was fun because it's kind of, it's not an accident, but these things sort of get uncovered later, you know.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's like that, you know, for any, you know.
Well, that makes it, I mean, helpful for you because that's what your character is emotionally dealing with.
No, it's the best. Breakup, you know? Yeah, it was cool because your backstory oftentimes isn't in the movie, but I got to actually act out my backstory.
Right.
It was fun.
Was the father's death in the movie? I'm sorry to
no,
Adam, cut me off.
I love
you know,
it.
I don't want to cut you. I love
you.
No. I love you. Owner, sit down. But no, we're going to all get cut off in a couple of minutes, but in a minute or two. But
it was really nice.
But
to be owner,
okay.
Love
yeah,
this
I know.
Guy.
Me too.
We're going out in a little bit to have a drink. Yeah.
And I wish I could join you, but I have my son. I do. I was in one of his movies. Actually, I was in one of his movies. He directed me. It's called Richard's Wedding. He made it right before Summer of Blood.
Oh, wow.
See it. Please see it.
I will.
And then you'll see.
He's a great,
he's a great director.
I never met him in person. That's the first night, but he sent Rainstack, so I knew him through that.
Okay. Yeah. He's really, like, you know, he's great, and he loves people, and he loves filmmaking.
Yeah.
So he's really inspirational.
You can feel it.
Yeah. He's in it.
You can smell it.
Yeah. Yeah. He's in it. He's really in it.
Yeah.
We're going to get cut off in a minute. I probably didn't get to a fraction of the kind of stuff I would love to talk about, but that's okay.
Isn't that okay that we can have it to be continued?
Yeah, that's perfect.
I'll always talk.
Thank you. You know,
I
appreciate it.
I love talking to you.
Well, you probably have done so much more, like, bigger podcasts, but Howard Stern, apparently.
I wasn't on Howard
Stern. Oh, you were not. You were just referencing
an
episode.
But then when you didn't know the reference, I didn't want it, but there was.
No, I was kidding.
Do you love Howard Stern?
Well, I've gone in and out. Like, I don't have Sirius.
Well,
so
recently, basically, I was just talking about chomping on the mic because there's a guy he has on the show who does this great David Letterman imitation.
Yeah.
And this guy was, like, recording some bits and stuff for Howard Stern in a recording studio, but they had left the mic on, and it was, like, 5 in the morning. He was by himself in there eating chips and drinking Coke.
Uh-huh.
At like 5 in the morning, and they just play the sound of him eating, and it's so disgusting, but also so addictive. Like, I couldn't stop listening to it.
Sure.
And I was thinking about that the other day because, you know, someone who's chewing very loudly, it can be off-putting, but isn't it weird how sometimes it can be so nice?
Yes.
I can't describe it, but I was on a plane yesterday. I was in Mexico City, believe it or not.
I believe.
And sit next to this guy. And he just had such a sweet, like, you know, you meet people, they just got a good sweetness about him. He was a sweet man. Mm-hmm. And I was on the plane, and I heard him eating these chips. And anyone else eating them, it would have been really disgusting
gross.
To me. Yeah, and really gross. But it was so nice that actually I had headphones in my ear, which is good. That's where they're supposed to be. I was listening to music, but I could hear him kind of chewing, and I paused the music and I kept the headphones on as if I was listening to the music and just listening to him eat.
Right. Well, more embarrassing than eating loud or crunching, you know, is the idea that somebody actually is interested in hearing it there's some sort of gratifying experience.
As we said, attack the taboo.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm so totally. This whole experience has been a little bit.
Owner,
I love it, though.
The owner brings the best. No.
And Bob, we're winding it down. I'm getting hand signals from publicists, which
don't worry about the hand signals.
I know it. I know it by now, but still. I'm trying to be respectful,
Those aren't my hands or my signals.
Okay. No, Horner and I, we go, and he's been on this podcast 5 times. Oh, and people love when we do a show together because, you know, everything, it's like anything goes.
He is.
And
like
Bob once wrote me an email. He said, I just listened to an episode of you guys. We should make a film about, not that I think that he was serious about it, but he was responding to that owner mostly.
No, he's like, you know, if you pour like, you know, when you're at the beach or any type, you know, and around water and you pour the water with a lot of water on soft sand, it just makes all these little tiny moats.
Mm-hmm.
That's sort of what he is in a way. Like, he makes his own river.
Yes.
Like, he doesn't. There doesn't have to be one there. He'll make. He'll find a way. I guess that's what I'm trying to say. He's like running water.
That's why I keep having him back on. You know, he sort of centers me. In the I like having him. And Karpovsky's been on about five times,
too. It's funny to talk to him, though, because he's one of those people, too, that's so gregarious and funny that you also think that he might be messing with you.
Mm-hmm.
Like just now when we were in the car, when we were over here, he was asking me questions that I couldn't tell for a second if it was a joke.
Yeah.
You know, he's like, I'm sorry to be...
It's not a joke.
But he's like, I'm sorry to be a sycophant, but then I'm like, I don't believe that you. I don't. Maybe he hates me, and he's just messing with me or something.
No,
he's nice.
He's all about the heart. No, he is. He's all heart.
Look at him.
I know. Yeah, he is. He's crazy.
The guy back there with the red pants.
Yep. Oh, who's that guy? I don't know who that is.
The
I
red
can't.
Fucking pants.
I don't know. And a mustache.
Yeah.
I don't know who that is, but.
He wears them every day.
Get him out of here.
Just for
the
night?
He's offending. No, kidding. He's probably a nice guy. But I'm a nice person.
Behind my, you are a nice person.
I don't like to, I don't know. I try to be more, I don't know. I try to be like sometimes if I think I should be more, respond and be more honest and be like also like say when something's shitty and everything. And I just never quite, I don't think I can get away with it because I just ignore it. And then, I feel like I'm not being, like controversial or not being, I don't know. I should be more
raw.
Out there and be raw. But it's and I can be raw, but it's not like I. But it's not my nature to. I don't know. Be cut down the bad stuff.
Privately with friends at a dinner.
Yeah, of course.
Sure. I can relate to what you're saying.
Yeah.
I relate to what you're saying because I can be as off-putting as the rest of them. But, for the most part, I always enjoy, reading an interview or listening to an interview with someone who's excited about things.
Mm-hmm.
They could easily tell you how they're uninterested. But when someone, does their best to try to, tell you about something that they're into, that's gives more possibility to someone else.
I agree.
So,
yeah. Seven Chinese Brothers is here. We're seeing Seven Chinese Brothers
tonight.
And is there a theatrical for that? By the way, what day is that, Caitlin? Okay, I'm sorry to put you on the spot. I'll put in the intro.
29th.
August 29th. Okay, that's
right?
A way off.
August
All right, makes 29th. Sense. And then June 19th for the overnight, which is the Orchard is
nice people over there.
Yeah. Did you meet somebody named Danielle?
Yeah.
Oh, she's an old friend of mine.
Yeah. Daniel,
yeah, she's lovely.
Yeah, that's good people.
Jason, thank you. And
thank
if you will come back on, I'll, of course.
I prefer when anything is
in person.
It's much better to not get to anything that you want to talk about.
I agree with that. It's just exactly the kind of show I would like to be doing more of.
Okay.
We're done. Jason, just going to say, we just need a second.
Yeah.
Just one more second. We're almost done. I cut it off 10 minutes ago. He just doesn't shut up, son of a bitch.
I'm sorry.
Speaking of which. And your band was called...
I was in a band called Phantom Planet.
Phantom Planet, which I was at Sony Music, and we distributed that album, at least two of them,
yeah.
I think. Maybe
two.
Who
were you working with over there?
I worked for the advertising department, and they had an internal graphic production department, but during the time, it was in the 90s, and then into about 2006.
Yeah.
And we released at least...
That was the transition.
Yeah, big time.
That you were there for the.
I was there from the all the way down, and I got laid off ultimately. Unfortunately.
Did you know Harvey?
Harvey.
Harvey.
Maybe. Tommy Mottola.
No,
I'm kidding around. Yeah, I knew a Harvey. Wait, I don't.
Harvey Leeds.
Yeah. I didn't meet him. He
said something to me that really blew my mind.
Promise.
I'm pretty off the air.
Okay, we're done.
Sorry.
It's okay. We'll finish it up another time. Thanks.
There are things that I do in my bedroom that no one needs to know about.
Oh my God.
I think we've reached that point in the evening where we should leave before anything crazy happens.
I'm so goddamn proud of you right now.
What is going on here?
No, I'm gonna stay here forever.
Maybe this is what dinner parties are like.
Thank you to Jason Schwartzman. I hope he listens to it, and I hope he comes back. It was a difficult thing because there were a lot of people around, and he was about to be whisked off into, up to the screening. Olympia Dukakis walked into the room in the middle of it. I forgot to mention that, who was on this show already. But it was great for Bob to stop, and even though he couldn't even sit still for a minute, he's got all sorts of anxiety disorders, is my guess. But I still like his filmmaking. I like Bob. I think he's a funny guy. And if anybody can make me laugh as much as he's made me laugh, he's going to always be invited back to the podcast. And then thank you, Arner, of course. After about a year now, right? It's been over a year since he's been on the podcast. So it's good to finally get Arner back on as well. Thank you. Nathan Silver, this is his three-peat. That's right. That's what I'm going to call it. It's his third appearance on the show. He has got a new film. First of all, let me say he just premiered theatrically his most recent film, Uncertain Terms. Finally, it just happened. I missed it. He even asked me to moderate. I didn't see the email. I felt bad. But we got together just the other day, and his follow-up now, this is his fifth feature film, is called Stinking Heaven. Again, this is his fifth film, and it's going to be premiering on the 18th of June at BAM Cinema Fest here in Brooklyn. So if you're not in Brooklyn, be patient. It will be coming soon near you. I can tell you that. We can't announce exactly the specifics of that, why that is, but it will be coming soon to you. And you can catch a lot of his films through Fandor. There'll be more information to share with you soon about Nathan. So let's go right into that. This is my conversation with filmmaker Nathan Silver.
Jim. I want to move to the house with you. I know you have all those women there. I was hoping.
Yeah, come. I don't think that would work out.
No, I think it'd be good. It'd be a good chance for me to meet like some women or something like that.
Yeah, it's not what the house is really for, though, and you don't really have a problem, so.
The problem is that I'd like to meet somebody or something.
Right, it's not that kind of house. Right.
Okay, but see, I was wondering, because there's a girl at the library that I really like.
You should go to the library, then.
Right, but I need some, like, practice or something.
You don't get to practice at the house.
But how can I
hear you, Dwayne. Look, Dwayne, I hear you.
I just want to go to the house. It's, you know.
But when Stinking Heaven is going to have its next Brooklyn screening.
Yes,
although BAM Cinema Fest is a pretty great premiere.
Yeah, I'm very, very excited about that.
Yeah. And
it's we've been playing a bunch of festivals, but to bring it back home to Brooklyn at BAM is it's a nice, nice way to introduce it to New Yorkers.
Second to the New York Film Festival, I'd say.
Or yeah, I love it. New directors, new films.
Did you do anything there ever?
No.
No. Oh, that's a good one. That's a good one to shoot for, too. I like that festival a lot.
Absolutely. I think they no longer consider me a new director because I've made five features now.
Oh, that's true. Right, that's true. Yeah, you'd have to be on your first or second, maybe.
Well, I can change my name.
So you'll just have to settle for the New York Film Fest.
Yeah, one day. One day, if only.
Yeah. Well, this last year indicates anything. It's that they're open
hope.
To.
Yeah, it's shifting. Right? Things are shifting.
Well, they have the Safdies and
Perry.
Alex Ross Perry's film. Yeah, so it's
Matthias's movie, Matthias Pinheiro's movie,
right?
The Princess of France, which is beautiful, but it's very it's small.
Mm-hmm.
I was on a jury that gave it an award in Bifisi, where he's from.
Which one?
Buenos Aires.
Oh, okay.
Great movie.
Stinking Heaven. This is your fifth?
Yes, my fifth.
Interesting. Also explores the group dynamic, which is one of your sort of themes you return to.
Absolutely, and I think it really takes it to its logical conclusion because there's no protagonist in this movie.
Yeah, it's a complete ensemble situation.
Yeah.
Right?
Disaster.
Well, there is some disaster that takes place during it, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's also lacking in comedy. This one's pretty much a straight dramatic film. There are moments.
I would say it's steeped in the darkest comedy possible. I mean, if you can find humor, it's, the blackest comedy there is.
Uh-huh.
For me, at least, and for some other people I know.
I don't wonder what your idea of, tragedy is, if it's not all these damaged souls that
I mean... I don't see it as a bleak movie.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Okay, fair enough. So the premise being that this is a group home upstate, is it Massachusetts? No, it's upstate. It's got to be upstate.
No, New Jersey.
Oh, New Jersey.
Passaic, New Jersey.
Oh, Passaic, New Jersey.
Yeah. Yeah, we shot. That's where.
Oh, you don't have a parent that lives there.
No, it was Carl Krantz, who's in Soft in the Head.
Sure.
He was our location manager, and he and his aunt, Diane, who's in the movie and who was one of the executive producers, basically opened up their family's homes to us.
Oh, very nice. Okay. And he has a small part, right?
Yes.
In
Stinking Heaven. Stinking. He plays Dwayne.
Okay.
And we're reprising that character. We're going to make a movie around that character.
Oh, nice. Okay. Yeah. And did I see you're shooting something in Colorado? Or
yeah.
Is that some sort of...
I'm shooting a movie with... I'm co-directing it with Mike Ott.
Okay.
And it doesn't have a title currently.
Right.
But... It all
is the Untitled Project.
Yeah, the Untitled Denver Project.
Untitled Denver Project.
Yeah.
Okay, but getting back to Stinking Heaven. So okay, takes place in a house in or property in New Jersey, Passaic, New Jersey, where a number of people are recovering from drug addiction, or I guess abuse, some sort of abuse, right? Drug abuse,
and alcoholism,
alcohol abuse.
Yeah.
And what a cast, though! It's like your indie monster threw up. And this is what came out.
Yeah, and it's also, I mean, there are some faces you might not have seen before.
Very true.
Like Henry Duvery, who plays Kevin, or Larry Novak, who plays Jean, and Eileen Kearney, who plays Marie. She was in Swim, Little Fish, Swim, but I think that's better. And then Jason Grizel has been in Jay Giampietro's shorts, but I don't think he's been in any features.
Mm-hmm.
So he's the other guitar player, singer.
Yes. So this takes place over several weeks.
Yeah. I mean, time is always... It's up to the viewer to decide how much time. I mean, because when you don't put it in a cart...
Yeah, unless you have intertitles or whatever the cart. Yeah.
So it's up for the viewers to decide.
It certainly took several weeks to shoot. Or maybe it didn't. Maybe. Cause
we shot for, I mean, around 15 days total.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I did see it. I did see the film.
Oh, did you go to the BAM screening?
They had a press screening.
Yeah, you went to the BAM screening.
No.
You got a link.
I got a link. I got a link.
I should kill the person who sent it to you.
Well, it is best because then we got to sit and I did have at least an opportunity. But I promise that what I'll do to rectify the situation is that when you have your next New York screening, I'll come to that. So I don't know if I'll make the BAM cinema.
Yes.
But I might, but they're not being, like, you know, if we'll see. I'd be interested in seeing it on the big screen.
Yeah, no, it's really, I think it's a real full, I mean, it's full throttle attack when it's on the big screen.
Right.
So,
I mean, really to describe any more of it, I mean, you're basically seeing this very eclectic group of people, even though they share, you know, this damaged knit part of themselves in common, but by and large, it's a very sporadically different group of people, young and middle-aged and older, and all sharing this space and, you know.
I mean, you have... father sleeping with his new bride in the same room that his daughter occupies.
Right. Yeah.
And she, I mean, there's...
Was that an anecdote or something you had heard, or did you make that up?
I mean, it just seemed logical for the house.
Mm-hmm.
Where else are they going to... I mean, are they going to sneak away and have sex?
It was their nuptial evening or what have you.
Yeah, it was their honeymoon.
So, yeah. So maybe for that night they could have figured out where to put...
I don't know. It just made sense for the house, though. The people are living on top of each other.
Uh-huh. Okay. But having, you know, relations in front of your child is that. But that this is the whole issue about boundaries. That it's one of those like byproducts of that living like that. You know, with addiction, with damaged kind of soul, is the boundary issues is often an issue. Like you're loud, you get into people's faces, you're not...
Well, and also the fact that they allow Anne, Betty's ex-girlfriend, into the house, knowing that that could potentially cause damage to Betty, is certainly not a wise decision, but it's made because Anne needs help and wants to be in the house and be sober.
Right, okay, so the...
It's like a dueling thing.
Let's describe, or explain it. Right, well, let's see. Eleanor...
Is Betty.
Eleanor Hendricks, who's an actress and a casting director, whatever, and has been on this podcast. She plays Betty, and Betty is one of the residents let's put it this way, in the prologue or the what we should call it
it's a prologue of sorts.
It's a prologue that we see that she has a very close relationship with this other woman, and then we cut to the house, to the beginning of the story in a way, And there, shortly afterwards, that relationship, that friend, it starts at a, and then the next part, rather, which is the main part of the film, starts at a wedding in the house, which is, again, Betty getting married to this older guy.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of shocking.
Mm-hmm.
And then, what's her name?
Anne. Played by Hannah Gross.
Oh, Hannah Gross. Okay, yeah. What else does she
Christmas
she,
Again, I Used to Be Darker.
Oh, right. She plays the girl on the on the park bench.
Yes, exactly.
In Christmas Again. Yeah. And we have an episode with Charlie Pukel coming up at some point.
Oh, soon. Fantastic.
I already did it with Charlie. That's a good movie, too.
Yeah.
And, I don't want to go through scene by scene, but just setting it up. Anne moves into the house and all havoc.
Yeah, and I mean, it's boundaries being, I mean, it's
right.
Those boundaries.
Yeah.
That should not be overstepped. Mm-hmm. Or where should you draw the line?
Mm-hmm.
If this person needs help but is destructive to another person in the house, mm-hmm. what's going to happen? It's not a wise decision per se, but if that person, Anne, Hannah Gross's character, needs help, you're going to take her in.
Yeah. Right.
Especially, and it might be good. It might also be good for Betty to face that thing from her past, that demon from her past.
Yeah.
Because it'll make her stronger.
Ideally. What happens, you'll have to see the movie to find out.
Yeah.
So to get back to the original point, Nathan, because I'm curious now. I mean, I remember in, Soft in the Head.
Yes.
It was part about a group of guys, mad on some level, you know, right? And this guy who picks them up off the street and takes them home.
Yes.
And that was here, in this,
mm-hmm.
where we're
this
sitting
apartment where
we're sitting right now. How exciting. It's very meta in some level. Anyway.
Yeah. It's like me using your podcast in uncertain terms.
Oh, right. That's right. We didn't get to that.
I want to use this podcast in The Perverts, the movie about Dwayne.
Is that the one that you're shooting?
I'm going to shoot that in the winter.
Oh, that's the after the after Colorado.
The Denver, yeah.
But so Soft in the Head, you have the group of sort of wounded souls that are picked up off the street, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you have, to some degree, Exit Elena has a drop of that going on. I mean,
well, it's about boundaries being crossed.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, so. Right. And then, so there's that issue, which comes up over and over. And then you have, of course, in...
Uncertain Terms.
Uncertain Terms, you have the group home for unwed mothers,
yep.
or mothers-to-be. And again, boundaries for sure are explored. And now this film. So where you have, again, a group of people sharing space and boundaries. So where do you, I mean, at this point, you must kind of think about like why you're continue to come back to those themes.
I mean, it's certainly something I'm obsessed with.
But you'd said this was also the logical
conclusion to those group stories. But I mean, I feel like I'm never going to escape that theme. I feel like themes, it'll come back. I mean, the Perverts is focused on two best friends.
Uh-huh.
It's almost like a road trip comedy.
Uh-huh.
A perverted one. Hence the title. But I think that essentially I find it, I mean, what do you make of living with others? That's the question.
Goes awry.
Yeah, I mean, into a room, there's going to be trouble.
That right, immediately, right. There's always going to be. I think the most, even with a partner, a romantic partner that you're agreed to, that you've decided to share a home together,
mm-hmm.
in regardless of the size of the home, I always felt like I need my own space. It could be even just a table, like a desk over there. That is only
my desk, and it's always been. Even when I lived here with a girlfriend, and two other people,
mm-hmm.
I always that was my corner.
Wow.
So.
Right. Please respect that corner as mine, and don't put your stuff on there, and just let me have that space.
Yeah.
It is important for most people. There are some people who don't feel that way, but I think most of us.
Yeah. Well, I mean, especially in New York, you're living on top of each other. You have to have some... Like, if it's 4 feet, it's like that.
I don't think, yeah, but I don't think
it's
it
like
matters.
That patch of earth in the Woody Allen movie, which is a Love and Death, where the guy, the father.
Oh, yes, this is, one day I hope to build on it.
Yes.
Yes, he said, right.
That's New York.
Yeah, New very York much. Living. Right. It's less of an issue when you have five bedrooms.
Yeah.
You know, it's true, but like you say, all of a sudden you have the guests coming in, and all of a sudden that house shrinks.
Yes.
That five-bedroom house seems a lot smaller. So it's very true. And the guest that was coming over for, you know, 3 nights is now there for 2 weeks, and you're pulling your hair out.
Well, it's funny. I mean, for instance, this apartment right now, we have one person in the other bedroom, then one person on this bed out here in the living room, and then another person coming over tomorrow to stay. I mean, it's a hostel almost. Because I'm always traveling, my roommate's always traveling, so we have people constantly coming and going. And
right.
Because my roommate, who also did the sound, production sound for Stinging Heaven, he's French, and a lot of French people come to New York, and they need a place to stay.
Sure, I know that. I used to host people all the time when I was a younger man, and really enjoyed it.
It's great. I mean,
especially when you get to go to their neck of the woods.
Absolutely.
And then you have that nice little perk. But I guess my point was that I do feel it's not just the size of the place. It is just our nature, too. And maybe it's especially in a Western thing, or it's an American thing.
To own some...
Just to need space to call your own. I don't know that it's, you know... I don't know if the need is less great because you're living somewhere in the wide open spaces. Mm-hmm. Like, I think...
Yeah, people go and get their guns out to, like, those old movies where, you know, you're coming on my property.
Yeah, exactly.
Step away from my property.
Territorial.
Yeah, nature. Territory.
There is a sense of that, yeah, right, in there, too. Anyway, I get it, though. I do get it.
But it leads to tensions, and I think at least all the things that movies are made of, tensions and comedy.
Right.
Tragedy.
Yeah. And then there is this other thing with the sort of the damaged people that, you know, even the pregnant women were kind of tortured.
I don't know anyone who's not damaged. I mean, to be honest. So I've never gotten close to anyone who's not damaged. I think
it's a relative thing.
It's a relative thing.
Some people operate better than others.
Absolutely.
Through their lives and are more.
But it seems like the more you read about, because online so much of, there's so much more information about the suffering of people, and it's people who confess a lot more nowadays, it seems, and there's so many confessions online of things that have occurred to people that it just seems like people are truly horrific to one another on levels that you wouldn't even want to, you know, you wouldn't even want to associate with humanity, but it's part of life.
Uh-huh. So do you think yourself, having said all what you just said, or do you think of yourself as a... optimistic, or do you look yourself as a skeptic, or nihilist?
No, I mean, I just look at myself as a humanist. The only thing I can try and do is to understand what motivates people to continue on doing what they're doing, which is quixotic or has some sense of, you know, changing what's impossible. But that's how I understand life, and I don't know if that's cynical or optimistic. I don't necessarily.
You don't put in those terms.
Yeah, it just doesn't mean, yeah. Mm-hmm. Doesn't fall into either.
Well, I guess also if you're raised by really, like, neurotic people.
Yeah.
You just, your frame of reference is different than, like, my parents spent 25 years in therapy, but you wouldn't know it. I mean, well, my mom, forget about now, but my dad is, like, a complete and utter neurotic. Like, okay, I understand. He's getting kind of older now. Yeah. I don't like using the term elderly, because actually he's not really elderly. He's not, like, shuffling. You know what I mean? Yeah. He's just an older guy now. He's pushing towards 80. But there's that excuse. And he's got it hard right now. He's dealing with a lot on his plate. But it's like, but where did all those years of therapy and group therapy and individual therapy, shouldn't that be in your fabric? Like, you went so many years, like, at a certain point, it just becomes part of who you are, and you have these ways of figuring things out just from that repetition and the talk therapy and all that. But it doesn't seem like anybody that older people that I know that have not been through therapy, it seems just like them.
Yeah.
We're not really dealing with things in a healthy, proactive way, you know?
I mean, I think that...
And he's a lovely guy, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
He's just a major neurotic.
I always think about this. I feel like at a certain age, people are just they're stuck in what they are. There's just no changing them.
It's true.
And I think, you know, up to a certain point, there is some malleability. But, like, in middle-aged people, and particularly with my parents, like, if someone expresses frustration over my parents' behavior, I'm like, they are who they are. I mean, there's no changing them. They're going to do what they're going to do. You either adapt to that or you fuck off.
It's about compromise, for sure. And I don't expect them to change.
But
although you...
You'd hope
in
for
the moment, you still try to push him towards certain things.
Well, there's that quixotic, that deal.
Yeah,
it's like faith in the absurd. I think that's I live according to, faith in the absurd. Yeah. It's like, and also like, I mean, it goes anywhere from relationships to making movies with the current state of affairs with getting audiences out to these movies. It's not like I'm making these movies for audiences per se. Right. I'm making them simply to make them, and people are putting their faith in me. I mean, people are helping finance these projects, and I'm doing the best I can to get them out in the world as well as everyone else who's put their time into them. But it's such a strange time to be pushing them out into the world, so you have to have some faith in the absurd that something will shift.
Yeah. Well, also, we're offering too many alternatives to keep them home to watch movies. So,
and I mean, there's so many.
You are talking about like literally going out. You weren't just using that as some sort of expression. You meant like going to the movies.
Yeah, going to the movies. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, but we're offering too many alternatives, making it too easy not to go to the movies at the same time as.
Absolutely, but I think on every level, you know, you're living a life according to, you know, an absurd situation, and so you have to have some sort of to push through that absurdity. You have to have blinders on of some sort.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. Well, you know, one solution, you can make your movies in 3D, and then they have to go to...
Yeah, I mean, that's true.
I just watched the...
Mad Max or something.
No, 3D? I haven't seen... I think it is.
I haven't seen it yet.
No, Goodbye to Language.
Oh, yeah.
My version of 3D. No, I would go to Mad Max, but I just watched this. But I watched it on 2D, because I watched it at home this time, which is the Godard.
Yeah.
His most recent film. I had seen it at the New York Film Festival and in 3D, and that was blew me away. It's a rough film. It's a challenging film.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you see it on a big screen in 3D, it's pretty cool. You know? So you could do that. There might be ways to get people to come to the cinema. Anyway.
But it's almost becoming this strange thing of panels, and like every night people are having panels in order to draw crowds out and stuff like that. Which
the idea of eventizing,
it's like peddling it's a strange thing. It's no longer relying on companies but this is a boring conversation because it's known, I guess, among the people who are going to listen to this, right? All this shit.
Everybody's interested. It's not boring, maybe. Or
I guess it's like talking about relations.
Superfluous.
I guess it's like talking about relationships. It's like,
I know.
My wife, I can't stand her.
Yeah, take my wife.
Take my wife, please.
No. Well, yes and no. I mean, I always feel like I think a lot about that particular issue. So I might be able to. So we actually might be able to push along a little bit, like that.
Yeah.
That topic.
Well, something like Sticking Heaven, for instance. Do you think there's an audience
about it? No.
And why do you say
Sticking
that?
Sticking Heaven.
Yeah.
Well, no. I mean, yes, there's an audience. I mean, again, we're talking about the draw to the theater.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, well, I mean. Okay, here's my thought about that, and that is, yes, there is an audience, but is there an audience to go to a theater for a week? No. So all I'm saying is, let's have a theater. Again, I keep going over, my audience is probably fucking frustrated with me because they keep saying this. A theatrical for the majority of films out there should be a weekend.
Yes,
now, but the theaters need a week, but that's not what
we're
talking
about. Well, no longer, because the New York Times doesn't matter.
Right. Well, no, that's a third issue. The second issue being the theater owners. They need to book for a week, right? Because that's the way it's set up. But just because something's what doesn't mean we have to retrofit to it.
Yes.
That's their problem. I don't mean that. Like, I'm willing to be part of the solution for that too.
Yeah.
But I came up with a solution for this.
Okay.
And I'm afraid to talk about it too much because I feel like they're going to steal this idea. But here it is. You have 4 or 5 independent films opening up.
Mm-hmm.
Book all of them in one theater for 1 week and rotate them.
Mm-hmm. I think that would be a great.
You get a weekend screening.
Yeah.
Maybe two, depending on how many films are in that rotation. Okay.
Yeah.
And instead of like having an empty theater for 5 days of that week, Sunday through Wednesday or whatever it is, or Thursday, you have actually this rotation where somebody will have 4 or 5, I don't know how many screenings. I haven't thought it through to that extent, obviously. But you would get your Friday or Saturday night screening. If you're a New Yorker, this would work really well because you have a lot of your friends and family, and maybe if it's a New York set film where most of your crew and cast are from, you're not going to have a hard time filling up a handful of screenings.
Yeah.
Because ideally, all you would need is a Friday and Saturday, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe 4 or 5 screenings. Mm-hmm. And they'd all be well attended. You could have a couple of Q&As and then be done with it. And then you have, then that's your theatrical. And you should get a review from that too.
Yeah.
So I think the New York Times is always catered to really the typical studio film, let's put it that way, because or where there's a major distributor. A distributor with money.
That you got to put into publicity to then...
Exactly, where you can posters and, mm-hmm. you know, people will know the film exists. And so, but for all these modest-sized films, and I'm not even going to the far-walling people.
Mm-hmm.
Are you far-walling it?
No.
No, it's
no,
we distributed. Have
a yeah, we
who's your distributor?
Breaking Glass.
Okay. So, but there are a handful of people out there that and I think that's primarily so far what the New York Times was getting to, since you brought it up, that they're going to stop reviewing some films. And mm-hmm. I think those are... those films. They don't want to go to some theater, even the Quad or the Cinema Village, but they don't want to cover every film because
yeah.
they keep paying these stringers to yeah. write reviews.
Yeah.
And most of them aren't, they're very small and not really helpful.
And no one will read, yeah, exactly. No one's going to read the reviews and no one's going to go see the movie.
So what it might do is weed out some of that, those mm-hmm. people that could probably get by on just putting their stuff on demand, you know, mm-hmm. or do a couple of screenings. Or, you know, it's and then there's the festivals that can fill in where theatricals are not available. There are more festivals than ever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like this movie we're talking about at the very beginning, Abby Singer-Songwriter, mm-hmm. doesn't need more than the festivals. I mean, if they really want to do theatrical, they're insane. There's mm-hmm. no possible reason. If you've done four screenings in New York City.
Well, that's the whole thing about the screening in New York City. As soon as you've... I mean, the nice thing I do like about BAM is that there's only one screening. At BAM Cinema Fest. Mm-hmm. So that... Because like
we're
otherwise...
We're talking about your film, Stinking Heaven.
Yeah. I mean, that there's only one screening for that, because then
yeah.
there's...
And it's an event.
It's an event. So it's not like four screenings where people, right. everyone who would call in anyway will go to see it at that point. And then when mm-hmm. you do a theatrical, no one... Mm-hmm. I mean, everyone's already seen it.
Right.
So they, yeah. that's in your network.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, well, you know, BAM CineFest is, you know, prestigious thing.
Yeah, see. I mean, I've always dug that place quite a bit. I love it's one of my favorite theaters
yeah.
in New York.
So. Right, yeah.
And I live close by.
And you live close by. But that's my whole... Like, I kind of have an evolving solution that
yeah.
I'm working on.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's any good.
I think that's absolutely the right way for things to move forward. Hopefully that will occur sooner rather than later, so I'm going to take a chance.
I don't know. Using my role, my rather model,
yeah.
is going to be difficult with the typical conventional theaters that are out there,
yeah.
even the indie theaters, which there might be a few.
Yeah.
Because it's just, you know, and then there's the sales agents and the book, you know, these.
Well, there's so
there's
many
an infrastructure.
That are, yeah, that, there's an infrastructure in place
that's not going to go for what I'm
yeah, but as it slowly implodes,
yeah.
it's going to have to look for other
yeah,
ways
have,
of going.
Yeah, right. So. I mean, and I do think if you can do it successfully, so it sounds a little almost like cooperative. You know, which is something I was thinking about, like a theater that's cooperative, that's owned and operated by people that have stakes in
yeah.
film. So maybe it's some filmmakers and...
which sounds like the exhibition. Beginnings of one of my movies. Sounds like a
there you go.
Scene of, you know...
Yeah, right.
Getting ready for trouble.
Yeah. Well, anyway, so just to wrap up, so do you know the date of...
Yes, it's on June 18th
okay.
at 9:30, and then there's going to be a party afterwards.
Oh, there is?
Yeah.
Okay, well, okay, so BAM Cinema Fest, which is this... annual showcase of the best well, I'm now borrowing flowery language from out there, but it's the way it's marketed, and
yeah.
you know, mostly right, is that BAM Cinema Fest is like the best of Sundance and South By, the best of the independent films, the cream of the crop for the year, and so that's why it's real nice that your film is in there. And it's running from like the 16th through, I don't know, it's almost 2 weeks.
28th?
Or 20, that sounds about right.
I believe so.
We're going to have on the BAM programmers on, if not this very episode, you know, by the next one anyway. So, and the opening night film is The End of the Tour, which is James Ponsoldt's new film.
Yeah,
I saw that.
It.
I saw it yesterday.
Oh, cool.
Or the day before. It's all a blur.
Yeah.
But it was pretty good. It wasn't bad. I was very, very, you know, glad I went to it, you know. And it stars Jesse Eisenberg and Jason Segel.
Yeah.
And it's about David Foster Wallace, this period where this Rolling Stone journalist and him, you know, this brief weekend or something. And then among all the films is Thinking Heaven, which is going to screen on the 18th at mm-hmm. BAM. Do you know the time?
9:30 p.m.
And then you're going to have a party where afterwards?
At Frank's Cocktail Lounge.
Oh, right around the corner.
Yeah.
One night a week, I think they do
karaoke. I think we're throwing a party. We're going to have some of our own musical entertainment.
Oh, you already have ideas.
We have some ideas.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very nice. And by the way, I appreciate it. the subject line of this email you sent me a couple weeks ago, which was about the theatrical you just had.
Yes.
For Uncertain Terms.
Yes.
At Cinema Village?
Was it? Yes.
It looked generic, so I thought it was one of those newsletters where you're just letting everybody know having our this. But I didn't know it was a personal email to me.
Oh, it's no.
And
no
I really felt no. I felt so. I think I had my son that night.
Yeah, no.
So it was would have been hard to do it Friday night, but anyway, I was really touched that you asked me to be involved.
Of course,
because I love your films, and I'm so glad you're on here for the 11th time.
12th time, 13th.
Third. It's I believe third it's your
time.
Third.
Yes, my third time. The first one was with my mother.
With Cindy, a very memorable episode. I wish I had that off the top of my head, but in the intro and in the write-ups, I'll put those other two shows so people can listen to that. And then there was this very, I remember, long and flowing conversation. I don't really remember.
It was right around Christmas time.
Was it around? Yeah. Well, I know it was for Fandor sponsored it.
Yeah. I remember it was snowing.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
And just a couple of blocks from here.
Yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, this is the third visit. And this feels like good. So, but one thing confuses me. I think I've seen only four of your films.
Yeah. The Blind has never screened in New York.
Okay.
My first film. It's going to screen in Brazil.
As part of your retrospective?
Yes.
Oh, well, I don't think we were on recording yet when you talked about those retrospectives.
So there's one confirmed right now, and that's in, it's next week in Brazil.
Are you going?
Curitiba, yeah.
Oh, they're bringing you out there.
Yeah, they're bringing me down. I'm doing a master class. Yeah.
That's great. So what does that mean, like one big talk?
I guess so. I mean, because I'm a master of nothing, so the class will master me.
What's the subject that
it's
you're
about,
supposed to talk about?
It's about directing
low budget
personal movies, whatever I do.
Raw films.
Yeah, however they see me, I guess.
Yeah. Are you going to be like, is someone going to moderate that? Or are you going to just take questions from the audience?
Well,
all the above.
I don't know. They just said that they wanted me to do something. So
you don't have to prepare?
No, I'll just improvise.
Mm-hmm. You've done it before, it sounds like.
Yeah, I've improvised before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, this is largely improvised, right? I mean, I know the points to talk about. And I guess that's what you know.
I hope so.
All you can talk about is your experience anyway, right?
So exactly.
It's not like you have to invent a curriculum for
a game. Yeah, I've already studied myself enough.
Did they use that term, master class?
Yeah, it's kind of funny.
Okay.
So.
I think, I mean, after making five feature films, you must have a lot of...
I think you just know... You know... what you're going to suffer through and all the mistakes you can make.
But do you learn from them and change and not make the same ones?
You hope to.
Well, you know whether you have done it or not. You've made five features. You know, what do you mean you hope to?
You're
speaking hypothetically. I mean, you
hope to. As
about,
you go along, I think, you know, in one film you'll make a certain mistake.
Right.
Then in the next one you'll avoid that and then.
But you're speaking in
the next one.
You're speaking in hypotheticals. So have you learned that?
No, I mean, I've learned certain elements from, from my first feature, which was a larger budget, to Exit Atlanta, which was the smallest budget, directly following. I learned to scale back completely, shoot with people I knew at the time, and that's what I wanted to do. And then I started bringing in other people for Soft in the Head.
Mm-hmm.
And I've learned along the way things that I want to avoid and how I want to work, but then that shifts. I mean, I think, you know, as you go along, you want to change what you're doing and you don't want to be stuck working one way. I mean, it gets stale.
Oh, I see. So you're actually consciously
you're shifting your process. Mm. And,
oh, okay. Oh, interesting.
I don't know if it's called evolution or just
boredom.
Avoiding boredom.
Monotony Are you happy making films? And
yes.
Are you happy with your
happiest,
lifestyle?
Right? Yeah. I mean, the best time I've had in the last few years was shooting Stinking Heaven.
Okay.
So.
And I would say it's your toughest film. I mean, on the surface.
Oh, yeah.
As a viewer, it's your toughest one to sit. I mean, you're right. I mean, you can sit through it and it's like it's riveting and there's not a dull moment in it, by the way.
It's jam-packed.
Oh, it's jam-packed and it's quite a eclectic, colorful group of actors in it and it's fun to watch. But there is a catharsis in there too, but it's tough. Raw performances in there.
We showed a rough cut in Poland and some of the,
which is what the festival's about, right? Rough cuts.
It's U.S. in progress. I liked quite a bit. In any case, I didn't have the time because it was very. I mean, we showed it to sales agents who all said that there was no way to sell this movie and all this thing. They all said it was like a Rotterdam movie, and that's where it ended up premiering. So they were right on that. Respect. In any case, when we showed it, some of the two women from the Polish Film Commission came up to me afterwards and were shaking and asked me why I would want to punish them with this. So,
well, it's a good response, though, because it's anger. And it's, yeah. And I think anger is a very – it means you touched a nerve.
Yeah, absolutely. It was just a very funny –
And they didn't walk out.
They didn't walk out. It's true.
So it's actually what you want. I've been angry at movies and pissed off that I sat through them. Mm-hmm. And then a week later was so happy I sat through it.
Yeah.
Because I felt something. And it was real. And I realized, oh, this thing's – when I thought about it, let it ruminate for a while. Absolutely. I realized there were things in there that bothered me.
Absolutely.
That I had to explore, you know. That's why I – and I say I repeat this too all the time. I apologize if you're listening. That Q&As are also very sort of artificial if you think about it.
Oh, yeah.
If you're going to an intense movie like your films – you don't. What, how can you possibly have something constructive to say 5 minutes later?
No, that's exactly it. And I don't. I think Q&As are simply to bring audiences out. I mean, yeah. it's a sales tactic.
Right. Well, it's yes.
I mean, on a certain level, but
people do on another level like to meet you after they see the film, and it gives them a catharsis too. By the way,
I don't sit through Q&As personally.
Uh huh.
So I mean, like, that's not something that appeals to me.
Yeah. I think the problem is if you don't sit through your own, then that would possibly
be a
problem.
Yeah, that would be that.
But then
other
than that, I don't blame you. And I went to a documentary. This is an exception. I won't say where or which festival. But I went to a documentary recently that was just so terrible and so misguided. It pissed me off. And it was not a case that, like I just described, where there was some sort of, you know, provocative thing that was bothering me. But it was just bad. And I was hoping that in the Q&A somebody would say something along the lines that I was feeling, where I felt like it was a very manipulative type of film. And nobody, and I just thought, I cut out of there. I mean, I would have normally just left.
Yeah, but you were.
But I was hoping that you would engage on an honest level.
Why
with
didn't
the
you?
Filmmaker. That's a good question, Nathan. That's a
that's a great way to end this in a certain way.
Oh, sure.
Isn't that?
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you, everybody, for listening to all that. That was really was exciting. So this is episode number 298. 299 has David Gordon Green, who is, of course, who's been on the show. This will be his third appearance. David's got a new film called Manglehorn, which stars Al Pacino and Holly Hunter and Harmony Korine and Chris Messina. It's a great, great film, and it's very offbeat, which I like. So I'm excited to bring David back on. Manglehorn will be in theaters also on June 19th, Friday, June 19th. So I have to promote two films playing up against each other, but that's okay. There's plenty of room during a weekend to see two movies. Certainly two as entertaining as The Overnight and Manglehorn. So I recommend them both. And also on the next show, Mark LaFia, who is been on the show before. This is his second appearance. Mark was on a very early episode when I was doing the show as an internet radio program before he was even podcasting. And he came on for a very, very brief segment. Back then I was doing half hours for, you know, radio, but I even split that episode that he was in into two because I had two guests booked. And so each was 15 minutes. So my prior conversation with Mark we more than made up for it this time. So I think it's a good half hour conversation with Mark. He makes all sorts of films. He's learned in his middle age how to make movies dirt cheap and fast. And so he's caught the indie film bug. He's also a fine artist. He's a writer. And we're going to discuss all that on the next show. And finally, on the next episode, BAM Cinema Fest Dimensions coming up. And we have the programmers coming on the podcast. So the programmers who were on last year are going to reappear again for another episode to talk about this year's BAM Cinema Fest season. And it's the cream of the crop from Sundance and South By and the great indie films of the year. So they'll be talking about that. I'm going to be doing a BK Live TV segment with them as well. That is going to be on, if you are living in Brooklyn, or I'll put the link up how you can stream the show no matter where you are. So you can actually watch it anywhere in the world if you have an internet connection, because you can stream BK Live, even though it's a local Brooklyn TV show. But the guys from BAM, we're going to do a segment next Tuesday, around noon or so, 12:30, we usually do this segment. And we'll have, I'm not exactly certain which people are going to appear, but it's going to be programmers from BAM, film programmers. So we'll be doing that. So that's going to happen on June 16th. And they'll be on the podcast probably the next day. Probably around the 17th is when I'll post that episode. So that is it. I don't really have a whole lot more to share. That's the next episode. And then you have 300, which I said, John Sayles. I already let the cat out of the bag. An hour more plus with the pioneering independent filmmaker John Sayles. So there, that's fantastic. And then I can even tell you the show after that, I believe, will have Mike Ryan, the producer of The Missing Girl, and and many other films. The Missing Girl is not even out yet, but what happened was I went on the set last summer, and if you're a regular listener of the podcast, you know that I had on several people from that film, including, for instance, the director, A.D. Calvo. I had on the editor, Michael Taylor. I had on some of the actors, including, of course, Robert Longstreet, an episode a lot of people still remark on. Alexi Rasmussen, who is the actress in the lead actress in the film. I also had on Thomas J. Ryan, a regular Hal Hartley actor who is also in The Missing Girl. So finally, the producer. I'm bringing on the last of the series. It's taken almost a year to do the whole thing. But the reason I waited is because they did not get into, in their initial round, they didn't get into Sundance or South. But, you know, it's not a great trajectory, so we're getting uptight. But then the great news occurred. They got accepted into a major international film festival, which we're going to announce in just a matter of days. So they'll be there. That's where they're going to premiere. And I'm going to go to that festival, and we're going to podcast again from the festival. And we'll premiere there. They're going to premiere there. And then the good news about this is when you get into an international prestigious film festival, you can kind of start to resubmit your film again and get it into maybe some of the festivals that said no the first time. But that's not, doesn't mean you can't try again. Does it increase your chances? Not unless you're in an international prestigious film festival. If you're not, then probably second submission is not going to work. I mean, the odds are against it. But in the meantime, get it into some huge, if you get into Cannes, that's going to increase your odds. But that's not necessarily the festival I'm talking about. Anyway, we'll tell you all about it soon enough. But I'm just very glad that this film is finally getting some success because it deserves it. And it also makes my podcast a little more interesting, too. So we'll bring back A.D. Calvo on and a couple of the other people from the film. But in the meantime, congratulations to everybody there. We'll have Mike Ryan coming up in a couple of weeks. And then on the same episode, I believe, you know, things get shuffled about. So I have more guests coming on and things get moved around. But Josh Karp, who wrote a book about Orson Welles, which I loved and read, is going to be on to discuss the book. I want to try to get it up soon because there is still this Indiegogo campaign to raise money for The Other Side of the Wind, which was the famous Orson Welles' last unfinished film, which is what Josh's book is about. So it would be nice to tie it all together. And much more stuff coming up here, folks. So thanks again for listening. The name of the show is Film Wax Radio. My name is Adam Shartov. The show is presented by Rooftop Films. Until next time, take care.
Three, four. You look like butter wouldn't melt in your mouth. But I know it will. Home wrecker. You look like you could take candy from a baby. I've seen you do it. Home wrecker. No one can wreck a home better than you can. And I should know, 'cause I'm a homeless man. And all down the